It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. I'm in the office of Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto. We are socially distancing. Mayor, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Mayor, recently, the Reverend John Welch from the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary, a longtime police chaplain, one-time candidate for mayor, was on the Confluence. He described what the African-American community was experiencing as two pandemics, COVID-19 and the pandemic of racism. What's your reaction to that?
I think it's right on, spot on. And when I say that, I'm talking civil rights and systemic racism. There is no doubt what Reverend Welch says is true. The only question is in this moment, will we be able to pull ourselves together to work as one to be able to address it in a meaningful way?
For the past month, there have been protests, marches, vigils against police brutality toward people of color in cities across the country, including here in Pittsburgh. What message are you hearing from the demonstrators?
The demonstrators have very specific demands. They want to either abolish or defund the police. They want to see police reform in a much more tangible way than simply the training of officers. And they want to see direct investment in our black neighborhoods that goes beyond brick and mortar.
How so?
Well, a lot of times the people who are the organizers or the activists are not the community leaders. Community leaders are the ones that are working in the church or within the nonprofit agency or helping the homeless in a neighborhood like Beltsover. They don't tend to march. Or if they do, they march more for peace than against something.
So are you saying the demonstrators should have less of a voice than the community leaders that you described?
I'm not saying anybody should have less of a voice. I think all voices need to be heard. But I don't think one person should be the voice. The black community in Pittsburgh does not need translators. When you go to the community, instead of marching in downtown, but actually go into Manchester and say, what is it that your neighborhood needs? They'll say, we need good jobs. They'll say, we need not to abolish the police, we need better police. And we need those police to be in our neighborhood, to be at the kids' football game, to be a part of the school, to be a part of the community, and we should know that police officer by his first name or her first name.
But marching downtown, that's where you are. You're in City Hall. City Council's in City Hall when they are in session and not remote. That's the symbol of decision makers.
It's a symbol, though. Government's job at a local level is predominantly been historically public works and public safety. The county provides the health and human services and the courts, and the state then provides educate, incarcerate, Medicaid. If we only change the actions of city government, we will not affect systemic racism. But if we get the corporate community involved, and we get the philanthropic community involved and organized labor and faith-based community, and we pull everyone together as one. And let me tell you why that's important. Number one, that's the only way that you change a system. You can't change a system just by government. We are at a point in history, unlike any other time in the 30-plus years I've worked in government, when that can actually happen. But it's not going to happen when you're driving others away from wanting to be a part of the movement because of your actions.
On June 1st in East Liberty, Pittsburgh police clashed with protesters. 2 days later, you issued a statement saying, quote, without question, there's a difference of opinion about what happened that day and the appropriateness of the actions of the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police, end quote. Did some protesters throw rocks, water bottles first? Did police fire rubber bullets, beanbags, and tear gas first? Is there any more clarity now, a few weeks later?
There's not really going to be clarity until the OMI and the Citizens Police Review Board reports are done.
OMI, Office of Municipal Investigations.
Correct, because nobody will believe one side alone. And now there's a federal lawsuit where everything will be available to be on the table. I don't want to say too much because of the federal lawsuit, but I can tell you that I have gone through the radio transcripts minute by minute, second by second, quite honestly. I've gone through body-worn cameras. I've gone through city cameras. I've gone through all the tweets and all the Facebook posts. There is evidence of all of the above. And I think that when everything gets looked at, there's going to be fault on both sides. And when everything gets looked at, there will have to be actions that will be taken.
You mentioned OMI. You asked for an independent investigation early on. Can it be independent? Can it be transparent if OMI, Office of Municipal Investigations, is involved? It's a city entity.
It's a city entity, but it's no longer a function of public safety. When we came into office, we removed OMI from public safety. We hired a new director who was the chair of the Citizens Police Review Board, and we put it under the law department. I have no influence within OMI, nor does the public safety director. The only person who would be the city solicitor, and only if she would be needed to have an interpretation of law. So the investigation itself will be completely independent. Now, given that, people will still be suspects. So we also asked for the Citizens Police Review Board to review as well. And not only the Citizens Police Review Board, but for them to reach out to the Department of Justice and the U.S. Attorney's Office, the ACLU, and the NAACP.
And are they participating?
I spoke with the state director, and they are not only participating, but they're bringing their national folks in as well.
You referenced the federal lawsuit. You, Police Chief Scott Schubert, Command Staff, Public Safety Director Hisrick, are being sued for allegedly escalating a peaceful protest into a scene of, quote, pandemonium and panic, end quote, regarding that incident June 1st in East Liberty. Your response to being sued?
Well, I can't respond to a federal lawsuit, but what I can say is that the information that was made available in presenting the suit, how can I say this? That there are questions about whether they are factual or not.
If another confrontation occurs between police and demonstrators, similar to what happened in East Liberty, would you ask for Chief Scott Schubert's resignation?
It would depend on the event itself. It would depend upon the actions of the chief, or if actions were done further down command against the wishes of the chief. At the end of the day, I'd hold myself responsible.
What's that mean, holding yourself accountable?
Holding myself accountable means, do I want to be a mayor of a city that utilizes less lethal techniques on its own people? The answer to that is no. And in the situation where that would occur, was it justified and warranted based upon the issue at hand, or was it done erratically and without proper command or proper authorization?
Final question. What reforms, changes, whether it's use of force, crowd dispersal techniques, defunding the police, must take place to start to gain the trust of Pittsburghers, especially people of color?
It has to start before that. It has to be, who are we recruiting to be a police officer? And then what are our expectations of them? And if we want to have the highest quality cadets, are we willing to pay to have that? Secondly is, how are we training them? The guidelines come through the state police, but that doesn't mean we can't add on. Thirdly, how are we promoting them? Are we looking for the people who do the best on a test, a written test? Or are we looking for the ones that are the coaches in the neighborhood that are committed after they take the uniform off to being a part of that neighborhood and being a leader within it? And then finally, how are we disciplining them? And even though state law limits our ability to discipline police officers, are we still pushing and trying to get the reforms that are needed? The second part is, what are we doing internally to change the culture? And what that means is listening to the good officers, listening to the ones who are involved in the community, listening to the ones who have had to face racism, the ones that had to face sexism, the ones that had to face criticism because of their identity. And listening to those officers in order to change the culture of Pittsburgh police into one that's more of a guardian than a warrior.
Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Nearly a century ago, French jazz fans formed a group called the Hot Club of France. Jazz at the time was called hot music. American jazz records were difficult to come by, so they pooled their record collections to make more music available to more people. Hot Club now has chapters in many American cities, making the music of that earlier time available today. The Hot Club of Pittsburgh was formed by pianist and music scholar Tom Roberts, who spoke with 90.5 WESA's Bob Studebaker before the shutdown.
Tom Roberts, thank you very much for coming in to talk about what I think is a really interesting aspect of the cultural life of Pittsburgh. The Hot Club of Pittsburgh, let's start with you explaining exactly what that means and where the name comes from.
Well, Bob, thank you for asking me to be here. Hot Club, you know, most people, when they hear the word Hot Club, they're thinking about like gypsy jazz, Django Reinhardt and things like that.
If they know that reference, but...
And that's part of the one of the reasons why this exists.
Okay.
But the Hot Club was started by a bunch of French college students in the 1930s, and they were just a bunch of college guys that would get together and listen to hot records.
Records from America, and jazz was called hot back then before somebody said, no, we're going to call it cool. And that's another conversation.
Much later.
And another conversation about the different terminology. But they got together, and then they ultimately wanted to put a band together.
Yeah, and so, well, they created this group with Stefan Grappelli and Django Reinhardt and a lot of the Reinhardt folks, and that became the quintet of the Hot Club of France. That's the idea of the historic Hot Club thing. And the new idea of the Hot Club is people gather to listen to music that they would never have the chance to hear anywhere else.
And listening to them in their original form on a 78.
Which is a profound experience. When you are hearing a 78, you are experiencing, particularly if you're standing in front of the machine, you are feeling the vibration of that person's breath coming back at you with only one step in between it.
Tell me a little bit about what will happen with the Louis Armstrong presentations, and I'm sure you'll preface that by talking about your absolute love for Armstrong and your recognition of his singular place in American cultural history.
You're correct, absolutely, and there's more dimensions to it as well. Louis Armstrong was playing music that was so different than anyone else. When I have presented this Armstrong thing in the past, people in the middle of it have said, oh my God, why doesn't everybody know this? And you too, Bob Studebaker, will say, oh my God, why doesn't everybody know this?
Yeah, I say that a lot in different contexts.
In so many ways. Yeah. What the Hot Club does is provide you with stuff that you've never heard. And when I bring this wind-up Victrola, and I put a steel needle in it, and I put it into the grooves, and they feel that life force coming back at them. I have had people just leave their seats and come over and stand in front of the machine, and they can't believe what they're hearing. because it's loud and it's vibrant. And even if they're not consciously aware of it, they are feeling the life force of that of whatever individual is there coming back out at them.
And it doesn't have that scratchy sound that that abused records have.
It does not.
The sound that somebody would have heard when they bought a brand new Victrola in 1920, whatever, and put a needle on it and heard a Louis Armstrong record that was brand new. And sometimes it isn't just Louis Armstrong, too.
I have a lot of Rembetika music, which is the music from the brothels and hashish dens of Istanbul and Athens,
wow,
which is incredible sounding. And I have a lot of klezmer recordings as well. Mm. If you were to come to a hot club event,
okay,
you would hear more music than you even realized existed. When I did something at Perk and Brew, I was playing, I played the very first jazz record. I played Roberto Firpo doing Fuegos Artificiales, fireworks. And then I also play the Louis Armstrong fireworks. But I also play Costas Gandinis playing these incredible things. You will hear more music than you realize exist. Ultimately, what happens is this opens up, and I think this is an important part. This is something that I love, and there's something in it that's very magical, and I want to share with you this. And perhaps if you can take something from this, you will go back and you will look at other things and experience that there is so much more music than we actually have access to.
So this is a way to broaden the horizons of the people who are there that otherwise would have stayed within the parameters that they're living in now.
Of whatever they have access to.
Yeah. I guess access is a big thing. And we just don't typically in the modern world get access to things from 100 years ago.
Or even 50 years ago.
Tell me a little bit about the cross-section of Pittsburgh that you might find at one of these events.
All types of people will be there.
From all neighborhoods and all?
From all neighborhoods. I mean, a lot of times there are people that are afraid to cross bridges and tunnels to go somewhere. So that's good for me because I get to take these things elsewhere. But you will see everybody there.
Tom Roberts, thank you very much for coming in and talking about this really interesting aspect of the cultural life of the city that not enough people know about.
That's why we're here, Bob.
Cool.
Everyone needs to know.
Well, thanks for coming.
Thank you, Bob.
That was WESA's Bob Studebaker talking with Tom Roberts, founder of Hot Club Pittsburgh, which has now resumed outdoor events. And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. If you enjoy what you're hearing, there's even more to read on our website at WESA.fm, where our newsroom is rounding up everything you need to know about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting our region and beyond. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, and Doug Shugerts. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.